Second, el escritor William Gibson, robando uno, dos, tres.
What are you going to the usual question? I would like to start at the beginning of your career. Do you mind?
No, not at all.
I would like to know what were you doing before getting published. I mean, if you were born in 1948 and you published Nuevo Romance in 1983, yeah, it means that you were 35 years old. So,
yes,
when it came out.
Yeah, when it came out.
So, what were you doing before that? Were you writing?
No, I didn't start writing until I was almost 30. I think I was 27 or 28. And I had left school to go to Canada to avoid the draft for the Vietnam War, and spent a couple of years doing nothing, doing whatever one did in the '60s. I'd gone to Europe for a little while and done nothing there, and I'd come back to Canada, gotten a degree in English literature, and then had no idea what I was doing. So I became one of those people who hang around the campus and do odd jobs. I was a sort of unofficial graduate student. And when I started to write when my wife was pregnant with our first child, because I realized that I had no career, and I didn't want to be an English teacher. And I had always had an idea that I would want to write, so I decided I would try it. So that, you know, thinking it wouldn't work out, but at least I wouldn't, you know, years later be saying, oh, I could have been a writer. So I thought I would try it, and it actually worked. I mean, from the beginning, I started to make money doing it, and...
Did you start publishing the short stories, or did you go to the romance?
No, I wrote short stories. There was a period of two or three years where I wrote short stories and sold them to American magazines, and they started to attract attention. Neuromancer was actually commissioned in a sense. I had no plan to write a novel. And someone who was editing a series of first novels, no, by new novelists, asked me to write one. And so that was Neuromancer.
Were these short stories science fiction short stories, or were they whatever else? I mean,
well, yeah, they were very much science fiction, and they were very much what Neuromancer grew out of.
Yeah.
So I had the same, always had the same material in the beginning.
Well, then comes the following question: did you choose deliberately to write a science fiction novel, or was it the other way around? That means science fiction chose you.
I think it chose me. It was my native literary culture. You know, it was what I had read as a teenager. I knew something about the business of it. I knew that it was, you know, I knew that people did it. It could be a job. And I don't know if I had much more of an idea than I knew that I wanted to write science fiction that would be in reaction to most of the American science fiction I had read as a kid.
So you were more or less, maybe you were conscious that while writing Neuromancer, you were changing the genre. That fiction would not be the same.
Well, I didn't think that it would change, but I wanted to make the gesture. And in fact, I don't think that it has changed, because the bulk of it remains exactly the same.
Yes. Well, I think I don't know. I have like a sensation that part of the structure of your novel, the way you draw the character. It could be anything else as well. I mean, they belong to this like archetype sort of heroes or anti-heroes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
You know,
but that was radical. That was a radical strategy on my part to do that. But the central core of American science fiction today remains very much the same. I didn't affect the core, but I may have created a sort of alternative passage up the side.
Well, to me, it's like it's quite peculiar. Tell your novels and short stories deal with people who live in this world or the private space, instead of conquering or suffering the consequences or living in other planets. The challenge to discover there are other things that you have written about have come to be part of your daily life.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't have the problems making water again for human beings or aliens trying to conquer the world. We have human beings who somehow deal with power, politics, greed, money, issues. I think that the 70s joke in Mexico about Kafka in Mexico, if he would have known Mexico about that time, he would have become like a non-regular traditional writer because of all the authorities running by. And that I think that this
That's
would
very
also
good.
Apply to you in the new future in the United States. But it would be more than being a science fiction writer, it would be like a sort of spend out, you know, pinpointing the regularities or absurdities of the
American science. Yes, that's very good. And I think the one difficulty I've always faced as a writer is that I'm sort of wearing the science fiction hat. So there are certain assumptions about what I'm doing, but my actual artistic program is very different.
It's better in a way because I discover or enforce me to that I discovered that architecture plays a major role in ritual life and tutorial.
Mm-hmm.
And that you have worked with some architects in both books.
Yeah.
Does it force you to reread the whole cycle to see if this was an influence when you work? Is that true? Is it true that somehow your text has become far more more construed in a way that's more experienced?
I think that they were architectural in a sense to begin with, but when they attracted the attention of architects and I began to meet architects and have some idea of how they thought, it became more consciously architectural.
Yeah, I think that the cycle going from Monster to Mona Lisa Overdrive are like somehow a number of situations and setting the characters of the there. And that in virtual life and story you are like going more directions at once. I mean, at one point or another.
Mm-hmm.
It's like discovering that the possibilities of the novel itself and, you know, getting to it is as if the buildings themselves and the cities themselves have become also part of the character.
The most important characters are these structures,
in
a sense. And I don't know what it means, but I'm continuing to explore it. The book that closes the Virtual Light Adorer's cycle, which I'm just finishing right now, treats the cyberspace of those books as a single structure. So there's no new large physical structure, but there's a different sense of the digital.
Yeah. You won't believe it, but well, I was reading Durwan, seeing this building growing up by night, very fast. It was like seeing it go to the
ground
so fast at night, because it's when people invade areas of the city which are abandoned somehow, and they build midnight cities somehow, and something really amazing. I have more questions. I don't like happy endings. It seems that it's to be the common thread among all the science fiction writers, where they create all these short stories, the movies, novels, the TV programs, etc. There's always like a happy ending. And it seems to me that the things you have created could have been a no happy ending, to then an openness and let the reader get what it was happening or go where it wants to.
Yeah, I think so. It's something that I'm moving toward. You know, I think the end of Virtual Light is ambiguous. It only seems to be a happy ending.
No, it hasn't been a happy ending, but it has like
it has this ironic quality. The end of Adoru, it really doesn't end. It just sort of goes out.
And I would like to comment upon your. Would you like to comment upon your female characters? Either they are stories for lovemaking, or they are young, you know, the very strong young girls moving the action or pursuing a number of issues to accomplish something. Why do you have such a contrast between the female characters?
I think that it's that I'm seeing the two. It's the two extreme poles of sort of the contemporary feminist viewpoint, but the very extreme poles. So they tend to be either co-opted and completely commodified as sexual objects, or they become samurai. They're street fighters, but it's not, you know, this isn't really mimetic fiction. It's not realistic.
Yeah.
It's not realistic fiction. So I would assume that in the rest of this world, there are women with much more mundane lives and occupations.
Yeah.
But the ones that I tend to focus on are in either of those two.
I mean, because it is very interesting that either the girls in the Toro are like moving the novel, you know, the girls who go to Japan they feel that the love story Shahendari, or the Messenger girl who is almost
The girl in Adoru, I think, is an interesting exception to that, and I felt that she was a new direction because she's really just a schoolgirl.
Yeah.
And she has a mother. She has a relationship with her. She has a relationship with her mother, and she's much more like a real human being.
Yeah.
You know, much more realistic character who in the end is not very much affected by the events of the novel. She goes home and goes to school
I have discovered in all the books that there's a strong influence on the culture of the Japanese culture you write in the romance but at the same time, the characters can become more common in that setting. I mean, it's not only in Japan, it's also in the world. Somehow Mexico is so bad, like, and the new geography of the world seems to look at not countries, but areas where corporations are controlling it. So these are the two influences. Do you recognize these Japanese It was your work, you have a and we love to learn from
it. Well, it was, I think it's historical. It was, I was writing these books during the height of the financial bubble that Japan went through. So when I was writing these books, Japan was, in a sense, the center of the world. And I think the books unconsciously reflect the time in which they were written. I have a sort of personal liking and fascination for Japan, but if I were writing Neuromancer today, I don't think I would set its opening in Japan. I might set it in Saigon or somewhere in Central Europe or somewhere in China.
Yeah. And about this new Europe, do you think it's going to happen with corporations controlling territories, economy? Well, they are already doing it.
Well, I think that the old idea of the nation states as, you know, sort of the supreme governing bodies is probably going to wither away over time. We're creating technologies that neutralize borders. And I think it seems to be inherent in digital technology that it would be impossible for anyone to control the flow of information in the way that the Chinese are now today attempting to control.
They're
trying to set barriers. They want to. The internet is growing very, very rapidly in China, but they've realized that any sort of information can be carried. So they're trying to shut it down and only admit a little bit of it. But what they don't realize is that it's actually impossible.
Because the internet somehow helped the Bosnians to realize how cruel or difficult or whatever the war was, and also it was for all the world around,
mm-hmm.
because all the images that more or less the Serbians were trying to hold on to go around were coming through, and
they will come through, and even in situations of very deliberate and active state control, it's so easily possible to encrypt information, like to send information through disguised as something else. You can conceal a text in a graphic image, or you can conceal graphic images in a text. So I don't think that, you know, nation states haven't realized it, but the day of being able to control the citizens' access to global information is really over, as long as this technology remains in place.
There is also a paradox to the use of digital technology, is that everybody's speaking about the millennial bug shut down all the computers and all the airplanes and prisons are going to be able to get out and whatever news. Do you think it's going to happen? Do you think that this paradox of digital technology coming through a number of errors and it's creating chaos at the end of the
day? I think it's an interesting phenomenon, the anxiety around it. I think that what it actually reflects is the first general awareness of how thoroughly computing has spread through the world. How now everyone is starting to see that it now affects everything. And it now affects everything that we do. As for what might happen, I suspect that it won't be, somehow I suspect that it will turn out to have been a millennial fantasy, just there's an anxiety, a historic anxiety around the change of
everybody's feeling.
Yeah.
The change of the millennium, like we have all the technology to watch the change of the millennium.
Another interesting thing about it is that it shows us how the architecture of code that underlies all these functions is already old and it's imperfect, and we can't afford to replace it. I mean, the people who wrote these codes 20 years ago, 20 or 30 years ago, they took it for granted that what they were writing would be replaced within a few decades by something much more elegant. But it turns out that it's not economically feasible to do that. It's cheaper and just as effective to patch it and build bits on top, because the processing time speeds up. So if it takes 300 instructions to achieve something rather than 3, the lack of elegance is invisible to anyone because it happens instantly. The instruction is commanded. It's done. So it's really like, it's like a city. It's like Mexico City. It's like if you look down into the infrastructure, there's all these layers of old things that are no longer applicable, and yet they can't be thrown away because everything is stacked on on top of it.
Yeah, the city itself goes like into a chaotic but at the same time harmonious chaos.
Mm-hmm.
It goes like everything goes at the same time it's harmonious, and everybody complains about everything for the same and nobody wants to leave.
Yeah.
Everybody seems to be like happy. We have extreme violence, we have a number of things maybe horribly happening around, but at the same time nobody wants to leave, and all the more everybody's coming.
Yeah, everybody's coming. Yeah, it's remarkable. It's been an amazing visit, and I definitely want to come back when I have more time to see it, because it's my kind of place.
Yeah. Well,
great. Well, thank you. That was an interesting